So hello everyone, it's great to have Liang Fu as from MIT as today's speaker. As many of you already know, Liang made a fundamental contribution to our understanding of topological insulator, superconductor, and more recently on the Fredon phases and also Moyer system. So today we will hear about three particle mechanism for superconductivity. Liang, go ahead
whenever you're ready. Yeah. Great. Thank you, Sunsik, for the introduction, and I'd like to thank the organizers, especially the team, for inviting me here. So today I'm going to talk about this, some work that I've been doing over the last 1.5 years. This is about a mechanism, unconventional mechanism for superconductivity that comes from the electron repulsion itself. So let me start by thanking my collaborators. These are brilliant young theorists. So this work started in collaboration with Kevin Slago at Caltech. And since then, my thinking has evolved quite a bit. And I'm gonna focus more today on the recent work I did with my student Val Crapo at MIT and these two papers on the archive. So let me start by a brief review of the essential ingredient of the Bardeen-Cooper-Schiffer theory of superconductivity for conventional metals. And as we know, in those systems, the attraction for pairing actually comes from the electron-phonon interaction. And this attraction actually competes with a much stronger Coulomb repulsion. The fact that the pairing is still possible is because the Coulomb interaction is instantaneous, while the phonon-mediated attraction is retarded. So what this means is that when the two electrons repel each other through the Coulomb repulsion, they move away. And as a result, the Coulomb repulsion become weaker. On the other hand, the lattice distortion created by an electron does not get restored as rapidly. And that's why the retarded attraction can actually win over the reduced Coulomb repulsion at low energy. Okay, so the strong downward renormalization of the Coulomb repulsion through this retardation effect is essential for superconductivity. And this retardation condition requires that the bandwidth and the Fermi energy is much greater than the Debye energy. And this condition is can be satisfied in conventional metals, but they are hard to be satisfied in narrow band systems. So, nowadays, as you all know, that the, perhaps the most famous example of superconductivity in narrowband systems is magic angle graphene, where the bandwidth is probably on the order of only 10 millielectron volt, and yet robust superconductivity was observed in a wide range of densities. And therefore, you know, there's a lot of interest in searching for electronic mechanism for superconductivity. So in these narrowband systems, the dominant interaction most likely is the electron-electron repulsion. So can repulsion itself give rise to superconductivity without invoking the much smaller phonon interactions? Now, another remarkable fact of the superconductivity in unconventional superconductivity in many correlated systems is that the ratio of the TC and the Fermi temperature is substantially larger than the case of conventional metals. And these are some of the materials, heavy fermion systems, cuprates, iron superconductors, and magic angle graphene. And here you see that the TC over TF ratio is actually between 1% to about even 10%. And in this latest example of magic angle trilayer graphene, you see that the TC actually reaches all the way up to about 10% of the Fermi temperature. So this is really a very remarkable effect. So regarding the electronic mechanism for superconductivity from repulsion, there's a very well-known mechanism called the Kohn-Lettinger mechanism. And here, the attraction between electrons actually come from the polarization of the Fermi liquid itself. Okay, so an electron can actually polarize the Fermi surface, and that produces a Friedel oscillation, and that leads to attractive regions in space, and that leads to attraction between the two electrons. So this is a very non-trivial many-body effect, right? So it's as if one tries to lift himself up by pulling his hair, right? So nonetheless, this mechanism actually is shown to be asymptotically exact in the weak interaction limit. And when the interaction strength is much smaller than the bandwidth, then the TC, the formula for TC is shown here. It is exponentially small. So the induced pairing interaction is proportional to second order of U over W. U is a bare repulsion and W is the bandwidth. So again, this reliable calculation can only be done in the weakly interacting limit when the interaction is much smaller than bandwidth. And in that limit, TC is extremely small compared to the Fermi temperature. Okay. So this brings us to the challenge of the strong coupling theory for superconductivity. There's usually no analytical control method. There's a strong competition with other states, non-superconducting states, such as stripes, density waves, and et cetera. And finally, in numerical simulations, these systems involving the electron repulsion usually have a sign problem. So a numerical simulation is exponentially hard in the large system size limit.
Liang, can I ask you a question?
Yes, please, Leo. Yeah,
just one back. So just clarification. I mean, you know, the standard BCS mechanism is also exponential. I mean, it goes exactly like what you show, except, you know, UEF effective as U is not U squared over W, but you take it to be some effective pseudo potential.
That's right. Yeah. So that's why for conventional, yes, go ahead, Leo.
But it's still exponential. And it, you know, and if you really think what is the U effective in the standard BCS, well, you take it from phonons, that's also has some denominator and also has some matrix elements. So it's not, it doesn't seem to be qualitatively different than this.
What happens is this, basically the, you're right that there is a prefact, there is a, for conventional metals, first, you're right that it's also exponential. And that's why the TC over TF ratio, right, for conventional metals doesn't easily reach 10%. Mm-hmm. Or doesn't, you know, reach at all 10%. You know, it doesn't even reach 1%. Right.
Right.
So, and in the case of this conductivity mechanism, I mean, I think the main reason is that this exponent is additionally small because it's second order effect. That's the point I'm making. Yeah.
Oh, I see.
It's U over W squared. Right. So when the interaction is comparable to the bandwidth, then, you know, this effective interaction seems to be of order one, but that's when the theory actually breaks down.
I see.
Yeah, okay. So that's the point I mean. Yeah, thank you for the question. Yeah, by the way, yeah, please feel free to interrupt.
And what about the what's the prefactor in that? Is it Fermi energy?
It's either Fermi energy or the bandwidth. I think it's probably Fermi energy. Actually, I think it's Fermi energy. Yeah, something like Fermi energy, yes.
Okay, thanks.
So also, yeah, this is also a good point. So that in the low density limit, again, this, the prefactor also become very, very small. Okay, so this is the motivation. Then I'm going to talk about this recent work with Val Krepel. And so we call it a three-particle mechanism for superconductivity. And the basic idea is illustrated by these two figures shown here. So the left figure is shown, illustrates this mechanism in momentum space. And we're dealing with a multi-band systems. Two electrons in the partially occupied conduction band can attract due to a virtual excitation of an electron from the valence to the conduction band. So in total, there are three particles involved. So we call it a three-particle mechanism. It's alternatively, and it actually it's much more helpful to actually think of this mechanism in real space. So you consider an insulator with electrons on the A sublattice, and then we dope this insulator. So we have electrons on the a small number of electrons on the B sublattice. And then, so in systems with narrow bands, the motion of electrons are strongly correlated. So for example, in order for the electron label one to hop to this site here, this is done through a second order process where an occupied electron three first hop to this site, and then it's the empty spot is taken up by electron one. And this hopping process, the amplitude of this process depends strongly on a neighboring site is occupied or not. And this is what I mean by saying that the motion of electrons are correlated with each other. And it turned out this kind of a correlated hopping involving three particles, two electrons in the conduction band, and the third electron in the valence band. This correlated process actually leads to pairing between electron one and two. So that's what I want to describe today. And it turned out that by expanding the kinetic energy, by expanding the hopping term, we are actually able to derive a control theory of the pairing interaction to show that the induced interaction is actually attractive. So to illustrate this general idea, let me introduce a very simple model. And for simplicity, let me start with fully spin-polarized systems on a honeycomb lattice with inequivalent sublattices. So A and B sublattices have different on-site energy, and the B site has a higher energy, on-site energy, which I call delta. And so we include the nearest neighbor hopping and nearest neighbor density-density interaction. So this is the shortest range interaction that's possible for a spin-polarized system. So I'm going to then just solve this model. Okay, this is a model where we So this is a model, at the case of fitting one electron per unit cell, we have an insulator that is adiabatically connected to the ionic insulator in the T equals zero limit. It's also adiabatically connected to the band insulator when V is zero, right? So in that case, we have a band gap. And we're going to treat the T as a small parameter. So in the small T limit, the ground state is very simple insulating state. It's a pretty boring state. And now the question is, what happens if you dope it? And this is a quick summary of the results that I'm going to derive. It turned out the doping immediately give you superconductivity, and the superconducting state is unconventional by all means. It has F wave pairing symmetry. And we have a formula for TC that works in a large parameter range. TC is expressed in terms of the bare model parameters, hopping T, the gap delta, and the interaction V. Okay, so this formula for TC turned out to be, I'm going to show that it's going to be accurate all the way up to about 10% of Fermi energy. So in this model, we can access strong coupling superconductivity with large TC over TF in a controlled way. And as you can see here that what occurs in the exponent is a coupling constant, and this is non-perturbative in the bare interaction strength, okay? So also, the ratio of the gap in TC is 4.8. That's much larger than the BCS value, which is 1.75. Okay, so now I'm gonna just describe how this result is obtained. So again, the starting point of our analysis is actually electrons in real space when the hopping T is zero. So as I said, at the fitting of one electron per unit cell, we have all the A sites occupied, and doping introduces a small number of electrons on the B sites. So because the hopping term, we're gonna now treat the hopping as a small perturbation. Okay, so this is a strong coupling expansion. And so the first order process necessarily would involve create holes on the A sites, and this creates a large energy cost. And therefore, all the low energy manifold is obtained, the dynamics within the low energy manifold is obtained by at least a second order process. And here I show all relevant second order processes in this model. And as you can see that you have a virtual hoppings between occupied electron to an adjacent empty site and then come back. And you have a hopping of the B electrons through a second order process that I've described earlier. And this hopping process depends on whether an adjacent site is occupied or not. Okay, here I also show the corresponding virtual intermediate states in all these second order processes. And for example, when an electron in A site virtually hop to adjacent B sites, you create an electron hole pair. You can think of it as a small exciton or a dipole. In this case, you have a dipole right next to a B electron. So this object is a polaron, charge E polaron. And finally, you can have a virtual hopping that's adjacent to two occupied B electrons. And then this object in the intermediate state involves three electrons on B sites surrounding an empty A sites. So this is what we call a trimer. And these intermediate states of dipoles, polarons, and trimers, they involve a different energy cost because of the presence of nearest neighbor interaction V. So for example, a dipole energy cost is delta because it involves a charge transfer, and plus 2V because now you create two nearest neighbors. And the same argument, immediately you can see that the state and energy of a polaron is delta plus V, while the energy of the trimer is only delta. So the trimer has the smallest formation energy in this model. So, and I want to actually highlight just how these effective Hamiltonian by integrating out these virtual processes, how that is obtained. So, and here in particular, let me consider a hopping of an electron on B sites, a double electron on B sites, to another adjacent B sites from I to K. And this can only happen due to a second order process where this A electron first hops to site J, and then it's replaced by electron I hop to replace this site. So again, because of the nearest neighbor interaction V, the energy of this intermediate state is either a polaron if this third site is empty, or it's a trimer when the third site is occupied, right? So the hopping amplitude, therefore, because of the interaction V, the energy of this intermediate polaron state and intermediate trimer state, the energy is different, and therefore the hopping amplitude is different. So to summarize, the hopping from site I to K depends on the occupation of adjacent site J. And that's why it leads to two kinds of terms. One is a single particle hopping, and the other is correlated hopping, a hopping that is enabled when a third site is occupied. And here I show the amplitude of these two processes. Okay, the single particle hopping is present even in the limit V go to zero. In the case of a band insular, the conduction band has a finite bandwidth that's due to the hopping T, but the correlated hopping is only present when V is finite. Okay, in the limit of a small V, the correlated hopping, but here I have a formula for all these parameters that to all orders, that is accurate to all orders of the bare interaction V. Okay, so this analysis is controlled by small t. So the systematic way of doing this is called the Schrieffer-Wolff transformation. It's a method that, for example, enables to derive like the Heisman model from the Hubbard model. But here we are applying this transformation to a system at any finite doping, to this model at any finite doping, and these are the results. So in addition to the single particle hopping, correlated hopping, there's a nearest neighbor repulsion between B electrons on the triangle lattice, and there's also three-body interaction. And here I show all these model parameters. So this is exact at any fitting for any interaction V, and it's exact to second order in the hopping T. And also I want to emphasize that this effective Hamiltonian contains instantaneous interactions. Okay, so there's no retardation effect. So I've only integrated out very high energy degrees of freedom involving another remote bands. So whatever shown here is involves an instantaneous interaction within the narrow band, the active narrow band. And finally, although this particular model only involves nearest neighbor repulsion V, longer range interactions can be included very straightforwardly. And the effect of longer range interaction is to modify the energy of the intermediate states. Okay, so Okay, so as a sanity check, let's consider the weak interacting limit when V is very, very small. And then it will be natural to project the bare interaction V directly into this active conduction band. And this will indeed give us interactions, the nearest neighbor repulsion and this correlated hopping, and they have a ratio, which is a 1:2:2. And this is indeed agrees with our exact results in the small V limit. But here I show all these induced hoppings and interactions in the effective Hamiltonian for dope electrons as a function of bare interaction V divided by the non-interacting band gap delta. In a small V limit, you see that the exactly obtained interaction agrees with the interaction projected, the projected interaction, bare interaction directly projected into the conduction band, but very quickly they deviate from each other. For example, the nearest neighbor repulsion is strongly renormalized downward, and it even changes sign and become attractive at large V over delta. So this says basically the interband processes are important and they strongly renormalize the interactions at the low energy. Even for the bare interaction V, which is 10% of the band gap, the renormalized interaction is strongly different from the projected interaction. When V is, we can divide this parameter range into two parts. When V is less than delta, the bandwidth for conduction electron is still large compared to the interaction. So in this regime, the quasi-particles, the dressed electrons, the dressed conduction electrons interact with each other, and the interaction is weak or moderate compared to their bandwidth. While when V is greater than delta, the interactions within these stressed electrons is strong, is large compared to their bandwidths. So I'm going to focus mostly on the regime, the first regime. Okay, in the first regime, even though the bare repulsion V is much larger than the bandwidth W, the effective interaction between the doped electrons are still weak or moderate. So that's the regime where we're going to be able to get controlled results. So remarkably, we'll first consider just the case of two doped electrons. And then we can solve this effective Hamiltonian exactly on the lattice. And we find that they already show two particle bound state. Okay, so despite that our model is a purely repulsive model, the two doped electrons attract and they form a bound state in the F wave channel. So this is a Cooper pair wave function. And here I plot the binding energy as a function of the bare interaction strength V over delta. And you see that the binding energy starts to be extremely small, but then it grows and saturates into an exact value, which is 3 times T squared over delta. And the Cooper pair size shrinks. And eventually at the limit V goes to infinity, when the bare repulsion is infinity, we actually get a smallest Cooper pair, just two electrons that resonate within a triangle. Okay, so we further checked this with exact annihilation of the full model on the honeycomb lattice. In the case of 30 sites, at half filling, there are 15 electrons over 30 sites. This is the insulating state. And then we can add one electron, or we add two electrons, and we look at the energy difference of between the energy cost of two electrons compared to twice the energy of one electron. So this defines the binding energy. And you can see indeed the binding energy is always present. And by finite size scaling, we see that the binding energy increases dramatically with the bare repulsion V over delta. Okay, so this is explicit demonstration of attraction. This is basically an analog of the Cooper problem, right? We're adding two electrons to an insulator, and we actually find that they attract despite the underlying interaction is all repulsive. So at low density, then we can perform a control analysis. So we can then write this lattice Hamiltonian in terms of the momentum space, the fermion modes in momentum space, and at low density, the electrons occupy the bottom of the band, which is located at plus minus k. Because of this hopping t is positive, on the triangle lattice, there will be two band minimums, k and minus k. So, and all these complicated interactions, they are all captured. They all at low density limit, they all corresponds to a contact interaction between electrons in the two valleys. So plus minus label these two valleys. And we can derive this continuum model exactly. So the parameters in the effective model, like the electron mass, like the contact interaction, are all explicitly related to the parameters in the effective model, which again is exactly related to the bare parameters. And this allows us to see that the contact interaction is actually attractive for any bare interaction strength V. So basically the low energy physics in the low doping limit is a two valley Fermi liquid with attractive contact interaction. So valley here plays a role of, you can think about the pseudo spin. So therefore then because of the attraction, we expect there's a BCS to BEC crossover that is tuned by interaction and density. And a valley singlet pairing in this continuum theory is exactly the F wave pairing in the lattice, because under a reflection symmetry that interchanges the two valleys, the order parameter changes psi. So this corresponds to F wave pairing. Okay. Now we can then use the known results. So this, and as you can imagine, that this problem is extensively studied in the cold atom systems. And in two dimensions, here I show the expression for the binding energy, the two particle bound state energy. And this is the results from the low energy field theory. And there's coupling constant G naught. This is G naught is a contact interaction. And here I show how this G naught is related to the bare interaction strength. And the field theory also requires a UV cutoff. And we fix this by using the exact results at the V equal infinity limit. And then we can compare the binding energy based on the field theory, showing the dotted line, and the exact lattice calculation that is shown in the solid line. And you see they are in perfect agreement. So this shows us that the derivation of the continuum theory from the lattice is correct. And finally, if we go to finite density beyond the low density limit, this Hamiltonian is complicated, but unlike the single band Hubbard model, which is purely repulsive, this effective Hamiltonian already contains pairing interaction, attractive interaction in the F wave channel. And therefore we can do a mean field calculation, and the pairing interaction is shown here. And interestingly, you can see that in the small V limit, when the bare repulsion V is small, if we directly just project the bare interaction into the conduction band, then two lambda would equal to VF. So the pairing interaction is exactly zero. So this is an important message I want to emphasize. Projecting the bare interaction into the conduction band does not produce pairing. But on the other hand, if we take into account of interband virtual process, the pairing interaction is attractive, is immediately attractive. So on the lattice, at low doping, we have a two Fermi surface surrounding the K and K prime point, and you have a finite supertunneling gap there. But as you go above one quarter of doping, then the Fermi surface becomes singly connected surrounding the gamma point, and the F wave order parameter has line nodes along the gamma M direction. So we get a nodal superconductor with point nodes. Okay. So here is basically a phase diagram. The TC as a function of the doping, or as a function of the interaction strength V over delta. And this is because of in the low density limit, this formula for TC is obtained from the cold atom community, in the case of the attractive interaction. And basically, at a low but not too low density, there is a BCS regime. And in that BCS regime, the TC is essentially determined by the geometric mean of the Fermi energy and the two particle binding energy. And I can express all of these in terms of original bare molar parameters. And there's extensive numerical study for this attractive Fermi liquid because it has no sign problems. It's shown that this kind of formula is actually accurate all the way for as you increase the interaction strength, this formula remains valid all the way until TC reaches 10% of TF. And this bound of TC to about 12% of TF was derived by Mohit, again, in the context of cold atom systems. So here, what we have shown is that you start with a model on the lattice with bare repulsion. The interband processes actually can give rise to attraction in the low energy. Also, the ratio of Gavin TC is 4.79. Here, the large value is much larger than 1.74 in the BCS theory, because in BCS theory, the pairing interaction only exists in a very narrow energy range bounded by the Debye frequency. While in our theory, the induced interaction, attractive interaction, spreads over the entire bands. So TC actually receives contribution from all states within the band. And so there's no Debye energy cutoff. So the cutoff is the bandwidth itself. And for that reason, the gap TC ratio is much larger. So we further compared these analytical results with numerical exact annihilation studies for finite density. And for example, here I'm showing ground state energy as a function of twisted boundary conditions. And you see there's a H over 2E periodicity that's consistent with pairing. And here I show the superfluid stiffness and the pairing gap as a function of V over delta. And you see that the stiffness is finite, showing that there's a superfluidity order, and the gap increases with V over delta. For small V, the gap has strong finite size effect because the Cooper pair size is large. But as you approach V over delta around 0.7 or 0.8, the Cooper pair size becomes small, and you see that the gap value agrees with what you expect from the BC-BCS crossover. And as you further increase the interaction strength, then you enter into a strongly correlated regime, first to the BEC regime, and then I think lattice effect become more important, and that's why the supermelting state is destroyed. So I also want to mention that if you go above the 1/4 of doping, we find the parameter regime where the charge stiffness is finite, but the pairing gap is very small, essentially zero. So this is consistent with the presence of nodes in the supergrinding state at higher doping. And here I plot the stiffness as a function of doping and the V over delta based on the exact annihilation study. And you see that at the small doping, then we have a robust superconductivity. But as you go to larger doping and you go to larger interaction strengths, and then the stiffness drops rapidly. And so basically at very large V over delta and at a large doping, we expect there will be competing states. So these are the regimes where lattice effects are important, and even these quasi-particles become strongly interacting with each other. So there may be, say, phase separation, and then maybe other competing states. So, but I want to emphasize that the theory is analytically controlled at low density and for a very wide range of V over delta. Okay, and that's where we get a robust F-wave superconductivity. We further studied the effect of longer range interactions without going into details. I just want to show that superconductivity is, at finite doping is remarkably robust even when we include longer range interactions. So is there any question at this point?
So there was a question on the chat box. So what is the KT temperature?
This is a good question. So in the BCS regime, I think TC will be determined mostly by phase fluctuations. So let me remind you that as is known from the BC-BCS crossover, the BEC regime occurs when the Fermi energy is small compared to or small or comparable to the two-particle binding energy. Okay, when the Fermi energy is much bigger than the two particle binding energy, then we are in the BCS regime. So this formula here is actually valid for the BCS regime when the Fermi energy is much bigger than EF. And then in this BCS regime, I think TC is well captured by this formula. In the BEC regime, actually TC would be smaller than this value. So that's when phase fluctuations become especially important in the BEC regime. Yeah. So I'm mostly focusing on the BCS regime where you can have simple formulas like this. So in the BEC regime, there are a lot of, Monte Carlo studies. Yes, a lot of Monte Carlo studies. Does this answer the question?
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? Okay, so then let me move on to the second part of this talk. Of course, this toy model for spinless fermions is perhaps of relevance to cold atom systems. Of course, in real solids, electrons always carry spin degree of freedom. And now one can certainly generalize this model to the spin full case. And for example, in the case of having one electron per unit cell for a spin 1/2 system, a classic example is this copper oxide cuprate. So in fact, at the feeding of one electron per unit cell, we have local moments at every copper site, and doping holes actually goes to the oxygen sites, and this is why the cuprate is known as a charge transfer insulator. So it's very much like the toy model I described, but of course here the problem is much harder because even at the feeding of one electron, the insulating states, there are local moments. So these local moments will interact with the doped electrons. This is a problem we are still studying. But I want to now move on to a simpler case. Imagine we have an even number of electrons at the insulating state. So in this case, we have a band insulator, and doping a band insulator, will that produce superconductivity? So experimentally, the answer is known to be yes. There are numerous materials which are superconducting upon doping a insulator. So these include a lot of the semiconductors, lead terawide, tin terawide. One of my favorite examples is this copper doped bismuth selenide. You dope a topological insulator, you become a superconducting state, et cetera. And remarkably, TC can be quite high despite the low carrier density. So in the most famous example of a strontium titanate, the Fermi energy can be as small as 1 millielectron volt, and yet superconductivity arises. So there's a lot of interesting question here. What is the mechanism for superconductivity from doping a band insulator? So now, again, we study this problem using this toy model, the same toy model, but now with spin degrees of freedom. So again, we have nearest neighbor hopping. We have the sublattice potential, staggered potential on the B sublattice. We have a local Hubbard interaction for A and B sites. And then finally, we have nearest neighbor repulsion V. Again, go through the same analysis. One can treat the hopping T as a small parameter and derive an effective Hamiltonian for doped electrons. And you have, again, correlated hopping term lambda. You have an on-site Hubbard U. You have nearest neighbor repulsion V. You have another type of correlated hopping. So not going through any of the details. The final result is that, again, one can do a two-particle calculation just for two doped electrons, and we find that superconductivity arises in the large parameter range and in the F-wave spin triplet channel. Okay, F-wave spin triplet channel. And here, for example, I show the binding energy as a function of the nearest neighbor repulsion V over delta for different strength of local Hubbard U. As you see that increasing the Hubbard U tends to reduce the binding energy, but still in a large parameter range, two particle bound states are found. And this is the phase diagram. Okay, so the x-axis. Yeah, question?
Yeah, what's the intuition for F-wave?
Yeah, this is an excellent question. So it's most easy to understand in the spinless case. In the spinless case, you have because of this pairing is induced by a virtual trimer state. A trimer is basically, you have three electrons surrounding an empty A site, right? If you have three spinless electrons surrounding a site, when you do a reflection, you exchange two spinless particles. And because of the Fermi Dirac statistics, the wave function will change sign. So that's what I mean by an F wave. Okay, so under reflection, the wave function changes sign. It has angular momentum L equals zero. On the 3-4 rotation, this Cooper pair wave function is invariant, but under reflection, it changes sign. And in the case of a spinless, we can start with a spinless case. In the spinless case, the sign changes just because you have exchanged two particles.
So
two fermions.
Is it important to have a Hornicomb lattice here?
You can generalize to other lattices, and then you will almost always get an unconventional pairing. Yeah.
But not necessarily F.
Not necessarily F wave, yeah. Not necessarily F wave, yes. Mm-hmm.
Thanks.
So, and of course, you know, the pairing we are looking for is a D wave in the case of a square lattice. So here's the phase diagram for the two particle binding energy as a function of V, the nearest neighbor repulsion over the band gap as a function of the Hubbard U divided by the nearest neighbor repulsion V. And you see there's a wide parameter range where two particle bound states are found, as shown here. Okay. And in this, within this dashed line, no bound state occurs. So here we see that when the Hubbard U is large, then in order to obtain pairing, it requires a minimum repulsion V naught. Okay. So therefore, it is absolutely important that our theory is non-perturbative in the interaction strengths. Okay. A perturbative analysis will not obtain superconductivity in this primary range. Also, this two particle bound state remains present if we include longer range interactions in a significant interaction range. In a significant parameter range, this bound state is still found. And again, one can analyze this problem at low density limit. Again, we have a two valley electron gas, but now electron carries spin. So there are three types of interactions. The interaction within each valley, the interactions, density interaction between the two valleys, and finally the ferromagnetic spin-spin interaction between the two valleys, exchange interaction. And turns out that, again, all these interaction strengths can be derived from the bare model parameters. And it turns out that that interband processes produce a sufficiently strong ferromagnetic exchange interaction, and that is the origin of this spin triplet pairing between the two valleys. So the superconducting state is spin triplet and valley singlet. Here, again, we show plot TC as a function of the doping and for different interaction strengths. And what's remarkable here is that because the two particle bound state already exists, so doping abandonment can immediately give rise to triplet superconductivity. And at low density limit, TC will then be proportional to the square root of doping. Okay, proportional square root of doping. And as you further increase doping, TC goes down because the F wave gap function is momentum dependent. As you move away from the K point, the gap decreases. So there's a non-trivial doping dependence of TC in this case. Okay, so by now that I've shown you basically the strong coupling superconductivity with unconventional pairing symmetry in toy models on the Hornicomb lattice, both the spinless and spin full version. And the question is, is this relevant to real systems, right? So these models are perfectly reasonable looking. They include essentially it's an extended Hubbard model. But can this be useful for real materials? So which are inevitably much more complicated. I will now describe in some detail a particular material, tungsten diteroride. And we're going to show that the superconducting state in tungsten diteroride may actually be a spin triplet pairing as our model predicts, our general theory predicts. So a monolith WT2 is actually a 2D topological insular in the undoped situation. There's a band inversion between the D orbital of tungsten and the P orbital of tellurium, and that leads to massive drag points, the conduction band has two valleys. Okay, and experimentally, these edge conduction has been observed. That's consistent with what you expect from a 2D TI. But quite remarkably, about 3 years ago, superconductivity was observed in electron doped tungsten diterabyte by both the MIT group and the Seattle group. And here I show the resistivity as a function of temperature for different gate voltages for different dopings. And you see there's apparently a direct transition from the insulating states to superconducting states with no sign of an intermediate metallic state at zero temperature. Now, the electronic structure of tungsten diterabyte, of course, is way more complicated than the simple toy model I've described. But we know it is an insulator at charge neutrality. And there's also some intriguing evidence that, that maybe there's a strong excitonic effect. So these are recent work from the Princeton group by Sanfeng Wu and Ali Asdani. And basically, based on both resistivity and STM measurement, the insulating gap is much greater than what you expect from the DFT calculations. So therefore, they attribute this to axonic effects. So then this makes us wonder, since our theory is based on the interband virtual processes, the pairing is induced by virtual axons. So it makes us wonder whether our theory can say something useful. And also, despite that the electronic structure of WTE2 is far more complicated, as I said, the conduction band also features two valleys. So in the low electron doping limit, the system should be a two-valley electron gas. So our theory basically says that if the excitonic effects are strong enough, then this inter-valley spin exchange interaction can produce spin triplet pairing. Okay. So now let's compare the prediction with the experimental data. So here you see that these are data of TC as a function of gate voltage. And actually we realize at low density limit, the TC actually follows very nicely with the square root of dependence on the doping. So that's consistent with our prediction. And our theory also says that in this transition from insulating to the superconducting states, the single particle gap should not close and delta over TC should be much larger than the 1.75, the BCS value. And these are predictions for future experiments. And regarding the possibility of triplet pairing, so we know that in the original paper, it has already been noted that the in-plane critical field far exceeds the Pauli limit. Okay, so violates by at least a factor of 4 or 5. Okay, so that's certainly consistent with triplet pairing. But most interesting is this experiment that is little known. This is from a Michigan group by Lu Li and his collaborators. And so in here, they were studying tungsten diterabyte thin films grown by MBE. And here it's noticed that the actual TC increases as you apply a small in-plane magnetic field. So this is quite unusual and is certainly incompatible with spin singlet S-wave pairing, right? So TC increases. So here is the TC as a function of the in-plane critical field. And you see this the increase of TC at a finite range of the in-plane magnetic field, okay, before it decreases again. So now in our theory, the spin triplet pairing it has a order primer, which is a vector. This vector describes the direction over which the Cooper pair spin is zero. That's called the D vector. And if we just take very simple Ginzburg-Landau theory of the order primer, because of the spin degrees of freedom of the triplet pair, it allows a Zeeman coupling, a term shown here. Basically, the Zeeman effect enables a linear coupling between the magnetic field and the quadratic form of the order primer. And as a result, we see that TC actually depends linearly on magnetic field in a small B limit. So, and we actually fitted experimental data with this simple result from the Landau free energy. And again, find a remarkable good agreement. So based on this, we believe and we propose that superconducting state in monolayer tungsten diterabyte is actually spin triplet. Another a class of materials that our theory may be relevant is moiré systems, for example, matrix angle graphene. And here, again, it has been noted that if we directly project the Coulomb interaction into these narrow bands, we will obtain effective interactions, including the dense repulsion, correlated hopping. Okay, correlated hopping already is present, just like in our toy model. Our theory, however, suggests that direct projection of the bare interaction into the narrow bands is not sufficient to produce pairing. Instead, one must take into account the interband processes, okay, to obtain superconductivity. And let me skip this part. How much time do I have? Can I use another, like maybe 5 minutes?
Yeah, maybe 5 minutes.
Okay, sounds good. Yeah. So I'll come back to the summary later. But let me very quickly mention. So far, basically, I've described a situation where correlated hopping of three particles can actually produce pairing within the conduction band. And so the pairing induction does not come from dynamics within the band, but it involves a third particle that is in a remote band. Okay. So let me now very quickly describe even more radical idea. This is work with Kevin Slagle. And here, again, superconductivity involves three particles, but it involves a trimer, a preformed trimers. So this is a even more strong coupling theory in a sense. So we can again look at the same model on the honeycomb lattice. And I've already shown you the energies of all these excitations, dipoles, polarons, and trimers for the model with nearest neighbor repulsion V. And let us now include longer range interactions. For example, this V2 is a second neighbor repulsion. Now it turns out that the second neighbor repulsion can actually lower the energy of a trimer substantially. Okay, so the energy of a trimer is delta in the case of only nearest neighbor repulsion. But when we further include the second neighbor interaction, the energy of trimer is further reduced. So this then raises possibility that when the trimer formation energy is negative, when the second neighbor repulsion is sufficiently large compared to the energy difference between AB sites, then a trimer actually will cost less energy than two spatially separate electrons. So in this case, doping would produce trimers instead of individual electrons. So here, everything I've described is purely from electrostatic interaction. I haven't even included electron hopping yet. Okay, so here, basically, just purely from electrostatic repulsion, we can have a situation that doped electrons exist in the form of trimers, instead in the form of two electrons bound to a charge transfer dipole. So indeed, you know, if we actually analyze the problem, the electrostatic problem carefully, including all interactions between first, second, third neighbor, et cetera, we actually can get a very compact phase diagram that all these long-range interactions simply renormalize the interaction, the insulating gap. The ED is the energy gap of a dipole. And this phase diagram is universal. The x-axis is just the ratio of the second and first neighbor repulsion. And you find that in certain parameter range, we see that the lowest energy per charge excitation is actually a trimer. So then, in this purely classical model with no quantum tunneling, at finite doping, when trimers are favored, the trimers can arrange themselves into Wigner crystals. So these can be regarded as dense waves of electron pairs because each trimer is a charge 2e excitation. Finally, in order to obtain superconductivity, we now need to take into account the electron hopping. So although the trimer is the lowest energy per charge excitation, when we increase the electron hopping, electrons form a itinerant bands. So there's finite bandwidths, while trimer being a composite excitation, its bandwidth is very narrow. So this leads to possibility that as we increase the electron hopping, the bandwidth of electrons can be sufficiently large so that a low energy electron can be close in energy with that of a trimer. So in this case, then we have a situation of a resonance, right? So trimers and charged 2e trimers and the charged e electrons can interact resonantly with each other. So this is very much like the Feshbach resonance, okay? Except that in Feshbach resonance, we're dealing with only two atoms, while here we're dealing with two charges added to an insulator, okay? And it's crucial that this insulator is present that allows the trimer to be formed in the first place. So, if you analyze this problem, I'm going through the, skipping all this, is that, so the resonance between the electrons and trimers, again, can lead to superconductivity. And this is actually this, I first learned this kind of idea from reading the papers of Lido Radlitsky and Victor Guri, and again, in the cold atom context. So, let me just stop here. Again, I'm going to just summarize that I've described sort of three particle mechanisms for superconductivity in two different versions. In the work with Kevin, these three particles are trimers, and these trimers are lowest energy excitation, and they are the seed for superconductivity. So in the superconducting state, the trimers are real charged 2e excitation. They participate superconductivity. While in the subsequent work with Bao, so trimers are just virtual excitations. Okay, they do not appear as a real excitation in the low energy space. Instead, just correlated hopping. Okay, two electrons can pair because of the virtual excitation of a third electron in the remote band. Okay, so so I hope I described to you the. This theory reasonably clear. And I really think this is the simplest way you can get superconductivity from repulsions. And if there's anything unclear, right? You can simply watch any movie of Woody Allen and to understand what three particle mechanism for pairing is. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for the very nice talk. Are there questions?
Can I ask a question?
Sure, go ahead.
I think one of the points here is that this theory is controlled and it has a larger range of validity in terms of TC over TF. I just want to make sure what this means. My understanding, please let me know if the following understanding is correct. My understanding is it's controlled in the sense that when T over delta and T over V is small, then we have a reliable expansion. And on the other hand, both TC and EF are more sensitive to T, is some power of T. And when you say TC over TF can be large, that seems to me to be something different.
Yeah, so you're absolutely right. You know, here, you know, when I say strong coupling superconductivity, I mean the ratio TC and TF to be large. So in the low doping limit, both TC and TF are small, right? And of course, in the narrow band limit, when the hopping T is small, both TC and TF are small, but their ratio is large.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, of course, in reality, you know, just like in any second order perturbation theory, right, which is strictly speaking, valid in the limit this small parameter go to zero. In reality, you know, in our paper we have some realistic numbers. You know, you can get TC of about 20 Kelvin. Let me put it this way. Yeah. So we have some physically motivated parameters, and you can get TC around 20 Kelvin. You know, in this mechanism. But it's a great question. So from a theoretical point of view, what I've described is analytically controlled in the limit the hopping go to zero, and in that limit, TC will be small and the TF will be small, but their ratio is large.
Okay.
Their ratio can reach 10% and the theory is still controlled. Yeah. Okay. You summarize very well. Yes.
Thank you. Can I ask a question?
Yes, Azam. Yeah.
I'm a bit confused about dimensionality because that's why I asked about the KT. Your model is two-dimensional, right?
That's you can generalize to higher dimensions easily. Yes, the basic idea is
okay. So that makes a difference because in two dimensions, right, you only have a KT transition that depends on the stiffness. So
my understanding, you know, again, there are experts here in the Code Island community that whether you are in the BCS or BEC regime, it depends on the ratio of the Fermi energy and the two particle binding energy.
In 3D, yes. I think in 2D, you only have, right? You don't have by Merman-Wagner, you don't have a TC, but you have a stiffness. So what's important is to know is what is the stiffness of the material of the. But you calculated the stiffness, right? That was your.
I did. Yeah. In fact, the stiffness is actually. The stiffness is actually pretty close to 10% of the Fermi energy. That is.
I see.
Yeah. So in our exact calculation. Yeah.
And how does the stiffness depend on density and on the other parameters? I mean.
Yeah. So in the Fermi energy depends on density. Right. So Fermi energy.
Right.
And as you can see here, yeah, right. So this horizontal line, I think, is the universal bound derived by Mohit.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and you see that in our finite size study, it's not as far from this line, right? This is 0.1. This is 0.15.
And what is here, the x-axis there?
This is interaction strength V over delta. The bare interaction V over delta. Yes.
So it's actually a weak function of V over delta. It's a...
As a function of V over delta, yes. And that's what we expect, because this is basically the BCS side. This is the BCS side. And in the BCS side, the stiffness is actually large. So my understanding then is that the TC is actually set by the
lower.
The usual.
I see. Okay, thanks. I was confused about it.
BCS gap, set a gap, yeah.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, any other questions? Okay, so if not, I have one question. So, Liang, so is the interaction between your real space Cooper pairs in your first part of your talk, is it recursive in the strong coupling limit?
And with no,
yeah.
Hi.
Hi, Liang. Yeah. So my question was
again for a few seconds, and but can people hear me now?
Yeah. So in the strong strong coupling limit in your first part of your talk, is right. the leading order interaction between this real space Cooper pair, is it recursive?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. So let me first go through these slides. So we haven't really explored that much the really really strong coupling limit. So by that I mean the induced interaction is so strong compared to the bandwidth of the doped electrons, right? This is what you mean. Is this what you're asking?
I was thinking of if interaction between Cooper pairs, I mean the bound state of the two electrons.
So what we calculated in this paper is we also calculated the binding energy for Cooper pairs, right? Mm-hmm. If you add four particles, you ask the energy of four particles compared to the twice the energy of two particles,
mm-hmm.
right? So we find actually in the regime when V is less than delta, the Cooper pairs repel each other.
Okay.
So that's why they're stable. Mm-hmm. While when V is approaching delta, then this four particle binding energy become negative, meaning that the Cooper pairs start to attract. So that's why we think there's some phase separation at very large V.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's an excellent question.
Okay, great, yeah.
But again, one thing is that, you know, it's hard to locate exactly where the transition happens because, you know, when you add four particles, the finite size effect become more severe. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I will say that, you know, the theory is really controlled in the low density limit because in the low density limit, the entire problem is phase-free mapped to this two-valley electron gas mm-hmm. with contact interaction. Mm-hmm. And that's attractive, yeah.
Okay. So thank you, Liam, for the great talk. And sorry, everyone, for the technical glitch. But,
yeah, my apologies. Yeah.
We made it. Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Liam.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Bye.
Yeah. Thank you, everyone.